And a very good Thursday to you, the 23rd day of April. May I be of the first to say good afternoon, and I should be about the first. It's only about 5 minutes after 12 noon. I hope your day has been going well. It has been if you've been getting your daily dose of Dietz, All Talk with Kevin Dietz. And stick around, because immediately following us, it's JR Afternoon with Ryan Ermani and so much more. We're on the path of relentless positive radio, as hard as that might be, as you're on the path on your way to making each and every day count. Each day is a gift, and you and I know that. We just sometimes need a reminder or two. I do want to thank you for choosing to be a part, an important part, of the best and brightest audience in all of radio. That's what happens when you are a part of the WJR family. Making this relentless positive radio, the team. Mike Parsons, our executive producer. Danielle Mason, the queen of the switches. And Rich Luzinski, keeping an eye peeled, which is not comfortable, peeling that eye. Keeping the eye peeled for WJR traffic and weather first. Well, we've got a lot going on. First of all, we'll go backwards. And we'll talk about the Pistons bouncing back last night, beating the Orlando Magic 98-83, evening up the opening series of the NBA playoffs at one apiece. And coming out the second half, the Pistons looked like a whole different team.
Yeah, Bickerstaff must have said something very inspiring or just ripped everyone a new one, because they were a completely different team in that second half. I mean, that run they went on to start the third quarter was incredible.
30-3?
I had to Google that when I heard the announcer say it, because I'm like,
it's 30. Crazy.
Yeah.
I wonder what works better, an inspirational speech or, as you put it, ripping them a new one?
Well, yeah, I guess we'd have to ask Bickerstaff and the players.
Probably because, not talking.
Because I did not love that first half. They still looked flat.
Tied at 46 at the half.
Yeah, and I'm like, this series could go very poorly, and then just two completely different teams coming out that second half. So whatever he said, it worked.
Cade doing an incredible job, leading the Pistons with 27 points. Now the series heads to Orlando. Game 3 on Saturday, tip-off at 1 p.m. Since we're on sports, I'll do a quick one here. I must say, I haven't been necessarily looking for it, but even Kim was telling me about, apparently it's all over the news, that a pitcher had a line drive come back right at him.
Really?
And the ball went in his jersey. And it was like they're like looking around for the ball, and he just kind of pops it out of his jersey.
Oh, yeah, Logan Gilbert. I've not seen that, but...
Well, I haven't seen it either. Kim has seen it all over the place, I guess. But Logan Gilbert, and it counted as a hit. It was ruled as a hit.
Really?
And I said, well, wait a minute. He stopped the ball, and he caught it in his person. But apparently the rule is the ball has to be caught in a mitt or a bare hand.
Let's see.
I could have sworn over all these years I've seen somebody pull their hat off and catch a ball with their hat.
Yeah, like in a league of their own. All right, Paul, do you see that on the screen? We're going to watch it here for the first time.
Oh, I don't see it. How do we see it?
Oh, you know what? Let me pull it up. There we go. All right.
Here we go.
Yeah, so.
Take a look. You do the play-by-play.
Yeah. Logan Gilbert on the mound. I don't know who's batting, but here we go. The windup. Hit, come back right at the, where'd the ball go? Oh, it's in his shirt, I think. Everyone's very confused.
And there it is. He pulls it out of his jersey. You know, and he's having trouble doing that, but he got it out.
You know, that's so impressive. That should be an out.
Well, the fact that he didn't get hurt, too, yeah. That it didn't, like, break a rib or something. He had a line drive back to him.
It says 107.8 miles per hour back to him.
Yikes.
There's the instant replay.
And it didn't hit him. You can see it go through the shirt and start to push out the back.
And look, he's kind of looking around. He's throwing his mitt. He doesn't know what happens at first. He has no idea where the ball went.
Right.
That's incredible.
That's an incredible. And that's a video. Thank you for those who you should know. Facebook and YouTube pages are live streaming our show right now. But you'll see it in the news if you didn't just see it just now. It's the first time I saw it was us. Live streaming it.
Yeah, so, just Google Logan Gilbert catches ball in his shirt. That's where I found it.
And it counted as a hit. I guess probably as a single, I'm assuming. Other things today, Sandy Pierce's birthday. Happy birthday.
Oh, happy birthday.
Our friend Sandy Pierce. And this is a momentous day, too. If you know, call Sandy Pierce, wish her a happy birthday. But if you know Ambassador Yousef Ghaffari, because this is a momentous day. It's the anniversary of when he came to America this day in 1972.
Wow.
He came with $10 in his pocket as a young boy. $10 in his pocket and built an amazing company and legacy, became an ambassador, and has donated millions of dollars to his school. I think it was Wayne State. I think I remember going when they named the building with Mara Ghaffari. And so many other ways he's helped people. We're so blessed and lucky that he chose to come to America legally back in 1972, Yousef Ghaffari.
I love those stories, Paul, when people know exactly how much money they came to America with, and then they built a life for themselves.
It's not a thing that you forget easily,
right?
Because you know how difficult it was. And he knew how difficult it was. He did not give up. He worked his fanny off. And frankly, he still does. Couple of other quick things. This says everyone loves them, and they're everywhere. Today is National English Muffin Day.
Not a big English muffin fan myself.
You're not.
I like the biscuits. I like the croissants. The English muffins I could take or leave.
In 2020, in the U.S. alone, 171 million English muffins were consumed. Since the 1950s, English muffins have been exported around the world and are enjoyed in almost every major metro in the world. More like a crumpet than a muffin. McDonald's certainly took it global, and apparently English muffins are good for you. But I saw the queen of the switches, Danielle Mason, agree with you. She doesn't like them either?
No, I don't. I would actually...
What's not to like about a English muffin with all that butter, or in your case, Mike, I don't know, whatever you can have if you can't have butter.
I can't believe it's not butter. It's just English muffins are fine in a pinch, but if I'm getting a breakfast sandwich, I find them to be more bland than, like a biscuit from McDonald's or
a croissant. Like a biscuit
on
a McDonald's breakfast sandwich, which neither one of us should be eating, but...
That's true.
I do prefer the biscuit.
Before I go for my three-mile-long jog, I eat a McDonald's biscuit sandwich for breakfast.
Which means you never have a McDonald's biscuit sandwich if you're being true to yourself.
Right.
Another National Cherry Cheesecake Day. The only thing I really like about that is the cherries.
Not a big cheesecake fan?
I'm not a big cheesecake fan. I don't know why. You guys?
Back when I could do dairy and cheese, I loved cheesecake. I miss it.
And what do you say, Danielle? You're being very quiet on this cheesecake.
I would eat any cheesecake. Take me to the Cheesecake Factory and I'm eating them all.
It's
surprising... Because I have family members, including Kim and her kids, that go to the Cheesecake Factory they've been doing all their life. I don't think they've ever had cheesecake.
Yeah.
Everybody goes to the Cheesecake Factory, but who's eating the cheesecake?
The main menu is very good. There's lots of things on that menu, so I don't blame them.
That menu is huge.
Yeah.
You just have to take the cheesecake to go. That's what you do.
Whenever I go to a restaurant where there are 4 million things on the menu.
Right.
I think, how fresh can this stuff be? It's got to be like all frozen or something.
Yeah.
How can you have that many items on a menu?
Yeah. Good question. We'll have to ask the Mr. Cheesecake Factory.
The cheesecake is not a cake, technically. It's a baked cheese custard pie with a crust.
Okay.
Details.
Not cheese bake. Custard pie with the crust isn't quite as catchy as cheesecake.
No, it isn't very catchy.
Let's go to the baked cheese pie with the crust factory.
Yeah. Golden Girls TV show loved the cheesecake. They went through 100 cheesecakes.
Yeah, they would always have cheesecake on the lanai. That was their
thing. I'm not going to ask how you know that, but clearly
you were
a Golden Girls guy.
Sure. Thank you for being a friend, Paul.
Well, the music's playing, and we're going to do our best to stay on time. Whoa! And that's what we're going to try to do. 12:14, it's Focus with Paul W. Smith. on this Thursday on WJR. All righty, Chris Renwick, we'll be there. You guys do the best job. It's the great way to start your day. JR Mornings right here. And remember, when you join us, you become a part of the best and brightest audience in all of radio. No matter when you listen to WJR, we have standards that run deep. That's for sure, starting early in the morning and running throughout the day and night. Managing partner, founder of Flood Law, PLLC, host of Behind the Bench with Todd Flood on WJR, is the one and only Todd Flood. Todd, good afternoon. It's always a pleasure, my friend.
Pleasure is mine, Paul W. Thanks for having me.
The president and his administration has reclassified marijuana as a less dangerous drug. To make it clear, this still does not legalize marijuana for even medical or recreational use under U.S. law. Is this much ado about nothing, or what's going on here?
No, it actually is a pretty significant move. Some people will say it's not far enough. Other people will say it's too far. But it takes the Schedule One, you know, drug equivalent of heroin and cocaine and moves this down to Schedule Three, which would be like Tylenol with codeine or, you know, along that genre of drugs. I think the biggest – there's three things that come into play with this, right? The biggest thing that comes into play with this is the IRS. The IRS now, because you couldn't write off your operating expenses. If you had one of the 40 states that has legalized medical marijuana, you know, you couldn't do it. You couldn't write off your operating expenses. And so it made an increase in the price, which then put out a demand higher for the illegal market to get cannabis. So that's number one. So that's going to change. It'll take time to change, but that'll take change time. Two, banking. Banking will come into play with this. It'll still be slow. I don't think it's going to happen overnight, but, you know, there's going to be the ability to now, you know, I think there's some 12,000 different banks in the country, and I think only 100 of banks or credit unions, I should say, deal with marijuana producers and the like. So this will increase the ability to bank. I think that's a big part of it. The other thing is, as it relates to it, now has basically an accepted medical use approval. So some 30,000, 40,000 doctors around the country have been using this for medical use. And now with President Trump signing off on this, that's going to be more in line. What it doesn't do, if you've been charged, your case is still going forward. If it doesn't change retroactively, so in other words, with cases that have people in prison or the like, it's not going to be a retro look back so that you get, you know, your penalty wiped out. So those types of things, it doesn't do that. I think ultimately it's moving in a direction where doctors that prescribe it are going to, you know, have more leeway, just like in the 40 states. It's going to be federally accepted as a okay medically. That's where this is going. And who knows, again, it's illegal recreational. You can't, you know, use it for recreational purposes or anything of that sort.
He knows his stuff. He's on the front line, and he can do a great job for you should you need an attorney. Todd Flood, managing partner, Flood Law, PLLC, host of Behind the Bench with Todd Flood right here on WJR. On that front line over all these years, Todd, do you think we've wasted a lot of judicial time on marijuana-based prosecutions?
I don't think we've wasted time. I mean, it's an evolution. It's as far as things go. I mean, you're gonna, you know, your kids or my kids are not gonna know what it was like to live in prohibition of alcohol. Their kids aren't going to know what it's like to not live without the internet. This is just something that's gone along in a progression as time. And I don't think we've wasted it. But at the end of all of this, is there truism? Is there realism in the fact that it helps medically? You know, we just saw the president talk about psychic, psychedelic drugs and PTSD and moving in that direction? Does it help people? Is there that medicinal value? And I think, you know, we're always trying to evolve, not devolve. And the fact of the matter is, I don't think we've wasted time.
I just wonder, because we always hear how tied up the courts are, how long it takes to get to cases, et cetera, et cetera. I just wondered if there was, a lot of marijuana cases gumming up the works that now won't be there.
Yeah, that's true. I think that will be the case. I think that will be the case, you know, ultimately. And, you know, we had this statute on the books called 7411. And with marijuana, it's just like Hyder or anything else. You got one free bite at the apple under 7411. You got caught and busted with marijuana. You could have gotten it expunged or taken off your record or never adjudicated with one if you pled guilty to something. But,
I'm just saying, I'm looking at they're saying it's the order represents a major policy shift for the U.S. government, which has continued its longstanding marijuana prohibition dating to the Marijuana Tax Act of 1937.
Yeah. Well, listen to this tax. There's another tax. Governor Whitmer put in tax in the state of Michigan, 27% on marijuana growers. This new act will help offset that, because now you'll be able to write off your operating costs if you have a cannabis type machine or, you know, operation going on.
He's Todd Flood, the managing partner, founder of Flood Law PLLC, and host of the great Behind the Bench with Todd Flood show on WJR. Thanks, Todd. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, buddy. You too. Pleasure, Paul W.
Always our pleasure as we continue In Focus with Relentless Positive Radio on WJR. So glad we can be together Monday through Friday, noon to 2. You can stream us. You can come back and podcast us. And that counts, too, by the way, if you go to WJR.com, if you can't be here noon to 2. And I hope you have the free WJR app, as we right now have our Facebook and YouTube pages live streaming the show with Relentless Positive Radio. We appreciate you being with us, and we depend on some really good guest experts like our next guest, Fox News correspondent, WJR contributor, Jared Halpern. Jared, always a pleasure, my friend.
Nice to be back. Good afternoon.
The Senate passes a budget plan to reopen DHS. But what does that really end up meaning if they can't get the House to agree?
Well, I think they are going to get the House to agree, because what they have done is what the House has asked them to do. You'll recall there were a couple of times that the Senate passed a DHS funding bill that did not, that it funded the entire agency except for immigration and border enforcement. And the House has rejected those attempts. And so what this does is it funds those other agencies, the ICE and border protection agencies, through this secondary method. It's called budget reconciliation. It is a kind of arcane tool that can be used to get around a filibuster in the Senate. So you just need a simple majority. With that being passed in the Senate and being sent over to the House, it seems likely now that the House will accept this kind of two-step plan that the Senate has put forward, but we may not find that out until next week.
So the $70 billion budget resolution would fund the two agencies for 3 years, basically through the end of President Trump's term.
That's the idea, because they want to put off another shutdown fight for the next couple of years, because this DHS shutdown, now 10 weeks old, has been in large measure because Democrats have objected to funding of ICE and Border Patrol without reforms to those agencies in the aftermath of the deadly shootings in Minneapolis. Those reforms were unable to get a supermajority, the 60 votes needed, passing a clean, so-called clean CR with just, you know, straight funding attached, could also not get 60 votes. So they had to come up with kind of a clunky way, which was passing a DHS bill that funds the department for the rest of this fiscal year, except for Border Patrol and ICE, and then handle Border Patrol and ICE separately, kick that over to the House. The House does seem like they will be in a position to pass that. That being said, there are members of the House Republican Conference who are disappointed that the Senate did not attach more. In other words, this is a reconciliation bill, a budget bill that only deals with ICE and Border Patrol. It does not have a lot of the other legislative priorities that Republicans would like, as it deals with voting reforms or overhauling voter ID laws or anything like that. And so you could see the House try and attach that, and it would prolong this process. It'll be up to the Speaker to decide whether or not he will entertain some of those efforts from inside his own context.
Jared Halpern, Fox News correspondent, WJR contributor, and one of those people a little disappointed, a guy I like. I like his homespun way of down-home talking to us, Senator John Kennedy, who briefly held up the vote, frustrated that the bill would not include parts of the Save America Act or other legislation. And I saw him say this, and he's probably right. He said, quote, "This is the last train leaving the station," predicting they would not be able to pass any other major bills ahead of November's midterm elections. But he then, of course, withdrew.
Well, they're not going to be able to pass another, but, I mean, listen, they'll be able to pass other legislation. What they won't be able to do is pass another budget bill, because using this budget reconciliation process comes with a lot of rules. You only get so many bites of the apple with it. They have to be very strict in kind of dealing only with budgetary matters. And so one of the reasons that Senate Republicans didn't attach some of that Save America Act provisions is because they don't believe that it's going to comply with the budget reconciliation rules, because it doesn't deal with spending. It doesn't deal with funding. It deals with changing legislation. And that traditionally is not allowed when you use this budget reconciliation process. That's kind of the trade-off. You don't have to have a filibuster, but it also has to be very narrowly tailored and very narrowly defined.
This is probably very much inside baseball, and most people don't know very much about this, but it's our baseball team when you consider it is our Navy, as the Navy Secretary, John Phelan, is out, according to the Pentagon. He was fired. I mean, he was unceremoniously, basically.
He was told immediately.
They didn't even pretend that he's going to retire with a gold watch in 2 months or something.
I mean, it's pretty extraordinary when you consider that it's the second major firing since the war in Iran began. Recall earlier this month, they dismissed the top Army officer, the chairman of the Army, in a pretty similar fashion. Now, this is different. The Secretary of the Navy is a civilian position, but it shows that there is still a lot of tension within the Pentagon, within the Defense Department, between some of these senior officials and the Secretary Pete Hegseth. And when kind of push comes to shove, it has been Hegseth and his team that have won these personnel battles. But it speaks to kind of how, I guess, tough it has become inside the department when you consider these are top decision makers. These are top leaders within the military apparatus that are being dismissed at a time where the United States is engaged in combat with a foreign adversary. And the Navy, by the way, is playing a key role because of the blockade, right? But this war right now is being essentially fought through these economic measures with the blockade of Iran. And the president just this morning indicated that naval operations are going to increase to sweep mines from the Strait of Hormuz, and that the U.S. Navy is being ordered to shoot and kill any Iranian vessel that is found to be laying these mines. So this is a time of a lot of action and a lot of major operations happening within the U.S. Navy.
Interestingly, Mr. Phelan championed the Golden Fleet, a major investment in new ships, including a Trump-class battleship. You would have thought that would have secured his position all the way through.
There is some.
Sorry, I didn't mean to laugh.
No, you're right, because there has certainly been a lot of reporting that the president wants this shipbuilding done. And listen, that is something that other presidents have said as well, that the U.S. Navy needs to kind of reorient itself and return to some of the shipbuilding. There had been some frustration, at least reports suggest, from the president that shipbuilding was not happening at the pace that the president would prefer. And so that is perhaps why you did not see an objection from President Trump when he was presented with this personnel move by his defense secretary.
Jared Halpern, Fox News correspondent, WJR contributor extraordinaire. Always a pleasure, Jared. Thank you much.
Sure thing.
We continue in Focus with Paul W. Smith. Relentless positive radio on WJR. Another beautiful day. I hope you're enjoying this Thursday, the 23rd of April. Boy, April has zipped by, hasn't it? Michigan residents packed a Lansing hearing yesterday to push back against the rapid spread of large-scale data centers across the state. WJR's Marie Osborne has a look at what they had to say. Good afternoon, Marie.
Hi there, Paul. So this turnout was so big, they had to use the overflow room. It forced lawmakers to extend the session as dozens of residents voiced concerns about environmental impacts, water use, and transparency in regards to these data centers. Most of the speakers opposed the projects, said decisions are being made behind closed doors while communities are left out of the process. A lot of them argued the state's review system looks at projects one at a time without considering the combined strain on natural resources. And the debate follows Michigan's decision last year to offer tax exemptions to attract these hyperscale data centers. Developers are now targeting more than a dozen communities in our state. Most of them are in rural and agricultural areas. Residents described being blindsided by these rezoning plans and confidential agreements negotiated even before the public was informed. Supporters, well, they're saying businesses and utility leaders, that includes businesses and utility leaders, say data centers, they're essential to the economic infrastructure, and they insist protections are in place to shield consumers and require clean energy use. Governor Gretchen Whitmer says Michigan needs to lead by example here and not lose these projects to go elsewhere. Paul, a bipartisan group of lawmakers are considering new bills aimed at tightening oversight, limiting secrecy, and protecting communities if these facilities shut down in the future. And then what happens to that big hulking building that is just sitting there?
You know, I think it was yesterday, the day before, I had Governor Snyder on, and that's a question I should have asked. And in fact, one of our top account executives, management guys, Link Bessard, sent me a text. I didn't see it until after the governor left, saying, what does Governor Snyder think about data centers in Michigan? I'm not going to say what I think he would. I'm not going to put words in his mouth, but I did hear you just say what our current governor believes, and I suspect every governor would have said that basically in a similar way, that these data centers are an opportunity for a great deal of money, jobs, et cetera. But it's another one of those things that say, okay, yeah, we want those, we need those, but not in my backyard.
And I
can't argue with those people because they paid a lot of money for their backyard.
Yeah, indeed. And not only that, we all use the data. We want it. We want these, you know, little mini computers in our back pockets and in our purses. And, you know, we want the data. We want to be able to use it. AI is here. It's here to stay. So, I mean, that doesn't come just out of nowhere. It has to have a place. So,
I understand the idea of them pulling their own weight. You know, I like the people who say they have to come up with their own power center, which can be done now. They've been working on this at Dow for a long while. These little mini power sources that these places should have their own power sources, that we should take a look at how much water they're going to use and all of that. And maybe we sweeten the pot by getting rid of our Michigan property taxes and make up that money from these data centers.
Now, there's an idea.
I can dream, can't I?
There's an idea. Yeah. I was going to say, I don't know that would really happen. But, you know,
don't
look,
hold your breath.
Residents really, but listen, residents really do have, we need to protect our environment. We need to protect our communities and our, you know, in terms of agriculture and the beauty of rural areas and all that. This is a really, I don't know that I can't remember the last time we've been faced with such a big question for the entire state that's kind of impacting all of us in the same way.
I tell you, there's one thing that we used to, I thought we, the people, were all on board for, and we couldn't really get anything done. And even the federal government stepped in and said, shut up, basically. And that is when we started having to accept other people's trash in Michigan. You remember all of that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean,
oh, yeah.
And when we said, no, we don't want it, they said, too bad. You got to take it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we can hope.
I guess that's all we can do is hope at this point. But I understand. I mean, data centers are coming. They're coming somewhere. And as the governor said, we should lead. I don't know exactly what that means other than saying, yes, you can build your data centers here. There should be all kinds of very important restrictions and maybe some great benefits to the people in the area. But I don't know what they are or what they could be.
Yeah, well, let's pin some hopes onto this bipartisan group of lawmakers. Maybe we should try to find who's on that committee and get them on the air and talk with them. Who's on the bipartisan committee?
It's important that you're saying something that we don't hear very often. Bipartisan.
Uh-huh. Yes. And what are you working on? What's it going to look like? How are you going to limit things like secrecy and oversight so that people feel like they have a voice in all this?
So one of the arguments is, I guess, this whole clean energy rule and the green energy mandate that cost, in this story I have, 30,000 farm acres in Branch County due to solar arrays. Michigan's 90% clean energy rule will prompt more of that. And it's important to understand that data centers will only drive more of a loss of farm ground in rural communities across Michigan. This is obviously one of the people against this.
Yeah.
All has to be looked at. All has to be weighed. See where the money's going, who's getting it, all of that stuff. It's tiresome, isn't it? It is tiresome.
It's
we used to depend on some people to look out for us on all this stuff.
Remember, was it Rosanna Dana who said, it's always something?
I think it is, and it was just now Marie Osborne, as we continue on WJR. Our number two of our Relentless Positive Radio. You can stream us, podcast us later if you can't be here noon to two when we are, all at WJR.com. Hope you have the free WJR app as well. And Facebook and YouTube pages are currently live streaming right at the moment. With our Relentless Positive Radio, the team, Mike Parsons, Danielle Mason, Rich Luzinski, and you are a very important part of it. Thanks for choosing to be a part of the best and brightest audience in all of radio when you listen to WJR. That's exactly what you're doing. And right now you're on your way to making each and every day count because, you know, each day is a gift. And we don't know, as Kim has reminded us, how much QTR we have, quality time remaining. So make the most of each day. And by the way, if you're not living the life you always thought you would live, it's never too late to make changes and do things to make that happen, to make it possible. It is true. And a lot of this is a state of mind. If you stop saying, well, I have to go do this, or I have to do this, or you get to do this. You get to get up and you get to go to work. If you change the way you look at it and think about it yourself, words are important. So, and they matter. And your brain is listening to the first person that you hear talking, which is you, talking to yourself. And I believe me, I make these mistakes. You got to be positive, 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 best you can. Pistons bouncing back last night, beating the Orlando Magic 98-83. Something to celebrate coming in to the second half. It was, 30-3 run for the Pistons. It was like, where do they come from? Wherever they came from, I hope they stay out, Mike. That's stay here, you know, with us.
Also, it's good to see that Cade has answered all the questions about how well he would bounce back from that collapsed lung. I mean, obviously, he was the MVP of this team before the injury, and he's continuing to play at that level.
27 points last night. A couple of quick things. Let's go over these. No, that's not going to work. Yeah, I don't. First of all, Kelce fines and suspends three politicians for insider trading on their own elections, meaning they were betting on themselves. Isn't that what you should do when you're running for office and you spend your own money to try to win the office? I don't even like the idea that there's now betting on everything.
Yeah. Like it's
I don't
one,
like that.
It's one thing on sports, but yeah, I haven't joined Kelce, which sounds like a healthy cereal to me.
Yeah, it's all it sounds
like. But it, yeah, it's... I'm not a big slippery slope guy, but I think it applies.
There might be a slope here.
Yeah, and it might be slippery.
Yeah,
and
I
yeah,
agree.
I think if you're betting on yourself, it just incentivizes you to work harder. But I guess, you know, they're worried that the slope can go from Pete Rose down to the Black Sox, where you start throwing games and
right.
all that. So
who knows? I just don't think that betting should be at the basis of everything. House panel advances $162 million for the Selfridge Air Base upgrades. That's a good news.
Yeah.
Supreme Court gives Nestle a win, sends Line 5 case back to Michigan court.
And I got to be honest with you. I've lost track of where that Line 5 case stands, because I feel like it's been going on so long and there's been so many court cases on it.
Seems like if everyone would have just let Enbridge do what they wanted to do, they would have by now encased the entire line underwater in a special encasement that would prevent any of the leakage that everyone's worried about.
Yeah, and I think it actually went under the bedrock underneath the water. So
right.
that's an extra layer of protection.
Right.
So,
Senate passes budget plan for ICE and Border Patrol bid to reopen home last year. We saw that already. Navy, now we knew, talked about that. The Democrats are now demanding that the FBI director, Kash Patel, take alcohol use screening tests. What?
Yeah, well, I mean, I know there's rumors about him. I know.
Are those eyes from a thyroid condition?
I don't know. That's a good question. And I know.
Because I have a feeling that it might be, and we shouldn't be making fun of a guy with a medical condition. We generally would not be doing that.
Right. Yeah, and I know that, you know, there are some people. The president himself were not too happy with him chugging beers with Team USA after winning the gold medal. And I understand that, you know, he's been accused of using government planes to fly him and his girlfriend around all over the place. But it's probably mostly political gamesmanship. I'm sure if you dug into it, a lot of people are doing the same thing.
Which doesn't make it right, by the way.
Right, exactly.
Meanwhile, what happened with Tom Leonard? Republican Tom Leonard withdraws from race for Michigan governor. What do you know?
So, yeah, I actually saw it on, I almost said Twitter, on X this morning, that he made a announcement that he was withdrawing. And from the little bit of the statement I heard, he cited the negative climate of politics. He said that, you know, if one candidate says something about another candidate, something snarky, you know, it gets millions and millions of shares. But if you put forth an actual piece of policy, nobody's talking about it. So it sounds like he was just kind of fed up with the climate and thought, to heck with it. You know, he's got a beautiful young family. He's got a great job at Plunkett Cooney. And he probably just said, "The heck with it! I'm going to change course."
If that's the case, I can't blame him.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, who would want to get down in the mud and wrestle like this now?
Yeah, and obviously he wasn't doing that well in the polls, so that probably
just five Republicans at this point. Republicans, as I see it, running.
Remaining, yeah. So, I mean, you know what? Maybe we'll have him on in the near future. We used to have him on a lot giving legal analysis. So, like him a lot personally, and I'm sure he'll
be
back.
Very likable guy.
Yeah. I'm sure he'll be back running and winning something in the near future.
Meanwhile, I can't bring up this last story, and I don't know why, but there's been a lot of talk about the fact that the president wants to rescue Spirit Airlines to the tune of about $500 million, and that then the United States would own 90% of Spirit Airlines. Let me just say something without casting judgment. We have the guy who founded Spirit Airlines in our studio at WJR many years ago. I'd have to ask Ann when, but it was many years ago. And they've had, frankly, the beginning. And with all due respect to President Trump, he had an airline at one point, and it didn't go so well.
Right.
You would have thought he would have thought about that and remembered that before he would put up $500 million of United States taxpayers' money to go into a business that is very, very iffy, very difficult. Unless you get a guy like Ed Bastian, who runs Delta brilliantly, you get a guy like that or a team like Delta's to take over whatever they're doing wrong at Spirit, then maybe you'd have a fighting chance. But otherwise, I don't know. The other part of this is it's not just saving Spirit. It's saving like 14,000 jobs, I think is the number I heard. And it apparently keeps all the other airlines in check.
Right.
When there are these cheaper airlines flying.
Yeah, it keeps prices low because they have to compete.
So it isn't just, why are we saving this airline? They did a terrible job. Let them go. There are ramifications and implications to everything, including this. So it's just not that simple. Amen. I will now get down from my soapbox. I got nothing else to say, except I'm excited that Lomas Brown Jr. is up next. The legend, Detroit Lions legend, co-host of Sports Wrap with LB. I mean, with AB.
AB and LB.
There are too many initials here, and I'm a guy who's made a life out of W. So here we go. What's going to happen tonight in the NFL draft, and what about our Lions? Stay with us on WJR. And speaking of sports, we go from basketball to football with the amazing one, the legend, Lomas Brown Jr. here. Co-host of Sports Wrap with Lomas Brown and Anthony Bellino, weeknights at 6, color analyst for the Detroit Lions Radio Network, and a guy with an opinion I trust and follow, with a few things to add about what might be happening tonight for our Lions. Lomas.
Legend, how are you?
Legend, and I am thrilled to have you on, as always, and you're sounding great. I'm looking at a picture of you right now. You're looking great. Before we're done here, we'll remind everybody about your fabulous golf tournament coming up sooner rather than later. But right now, we heard earlier on Kevin Dietz's show, your partner, AB, that the two of you are a little bit at odds as to what we think the Lions need. You want an edge rusher, he said.
Yes.
Talk to us about what you think we need.
Yes, legend. You know, the conversation has been which side of the line are we going to go on. We know we need linemen, but it's been either we're going to go defensive line or offensive line. And it seems to be the majority is going towards the offensive line. And, of course, you know, me being a former lineman, I love the big fellas in the trenches. But I just think we have to look at the defensive side. My biggest thing, legend, for this year coming up is how are the Detroit Lions defensively going to affect the opposing team's quarterback? We got to get hit sacks. We got to get this guy off his spot. And far too many times last year, the quarterbacks had 5, 6, 7 seconds back there in the pocket to find the receiver. And I don't care. You can have Deion Sanders back there as a defensive back. You know, it's only so long you could cover these receivers in the NFL. So to me, we're going to have to figure out a way to affect the opposing team's quarterback. And the best way I think of it is to get an edge rusher opposite of Hayden Hutchinson and just turn those guys loose and let them get after the opposing team's quarterbacks that we're going to have to face this year. That's why I'm leaning more towards the D-line, Legend.
Okay, well, first of all, nobody can question your credentials. You've been there. You've been to the Super Bowl. We haven't, and they haven't. And so you know what you're talking about. We know that from listening to you on Sports Wrap, Lomas, along with AB, Anthony Bellino, weeknights at 6 right here. Do you or do you feel compelled to not? I'm not asking you to tell us something you shouldn't tell us, but what do you hear from your inside position from the Lions? Are they leaning more toward the D-line like you are?
No, I hear that they're leaning more towards the offensive linemen.
What the heck's wrong with those guys? Aren't they listening to you?
And W, I know it's a lot of need, right? It's a lot of need that we need on the team on both sides of the line. I just think for impact, I just think the defensive end will give us more impact. We need to protect Jared Goff. That is true. We need to surround him with great protection so he can do what he needs to do. I just think some of those free agent additions like the Larry Barham and the May guy that we got at center, Cade May, I think those are two things that we've done during the offseason to kind of strengthen that position. And I do think we need to look at the defensive line to strengthen that too, because, again, they kind of work hand in hand, pass rush and pass coverage. And that's going to be a big thing this year with our defense. Will we be able to rush the passer, and will we be able to cover the wide receivers of opposing teams?
We have the legend Lomas Brown Jr. on the line. Just wondering, will there be any horse trading to try to move up from pick number 17 tonight?
You know what? That's been the dying question. That's been the question. What is Brad Holmes going to do? Is he going to move up and mortgage the future to try to get that impactful player a lot earlier, or if we're going to move backwards and try to get more draft inventory so we could make moves later on in the draft? He's been kind of close to the vest with this. If I had to say, W, I think they might look at trying to trade up a little bit more to make sure that they get either that offensive tackle that they want or maybe that defensive end that we need. But I think they might have to move up to try to get the person that they need and that they want.
Overall, Lomas, have you been pretty satisfied with Brad Holmes' Lions first-round draft picks under Brad?
So I've been pretty satisfied with Brad Holmes, what he's done draft-wise over the years. Yeah, it's been a few picks he hasn't hit on, but for the majority of the time, Brad has brought in some great talent. We got a lot of talent on our team. Now, W, Legend, I would tell you I haven't been happy with the Lions offseason. This offseason, I haven't been happy with it. I think we've lost a lot more talent than we've been able to replace. When you talk about Alex Anzalone, Taylor Decker, David Montgomery, Khalif Raymond, Amik Roberts. I mean, these are just some of the guys that we, Roy Lopez. We lost some of this talent, and we got to be able to fill this talent pool that we lost. And I just don't know if we brought in the equivalent talent to what we've lost. So, no, I haven't been happy with all season so far. They could make me a lot happier tonight, though, Legend, if they pick the right person.
All right. I mean, your phone is breaking. I want to shout out on the Lomas Brown Jr. coming up Monday, July, here before you know it. My country club, I haven't been a longtime member, but it's one of the clubs any What a great golf course. Chris Brown Golf Classic. Golf Classic. You can go to golfclassic.com. Golfclassic.com. Be a sponsor. To sign up to be there. 13th. You get. I don't know.
Yeah, Paul, you're breaking up a little bit. Lomas, tell us tell us about the Lomas Brown Junior Golf Classic that's coming up July 13th at the Country Club of Detroit.
Yeah, looking forward to it. We had a great year last year. It was the first inaugural one for me taking over from the legend Paul W. Smith, which I'm so happy that I was able to do. We're looking forward to having even more people out there and raising more funds. We're going to give away golf. I'm sorry. We're going to auction off golf carts. I got a lot of my friends coming out to play, especially some of the alumni. We got some of the active players will be out there this year. And you know what? We eat. We have a great time. We eat. We drink. We have fun and we play golf, and those are that leads up into a great day. So I hope everyone can come out and join us. It's for a great cause. It's for to raise money for the kids of Southeast Michigan through the Lomas Brown Junior Foundation. Again, Monday, July 13th, 2026. Be there or be square.
At the beautiful Country Club of Detroit. Go to LomasBrownGolfClassic.com. LomasBrownGolfClassic.com. Now, some more information on the story that we touched on a little while ago, and that is Spirit Airlines, which for as long as I can remember has had their hands full. I mean, they just have had problems making money. I may have been on Spirit maybe once. I don't remember for sure. I'm not a Spirit Airlines flyer. I am, without question, devoted to Delta. I think of them as our hometown airline, and I think of them as the official airline of the Paul W. Smith Show and the Paul W. Smith family. That aside, I have to pay attention to the talk of a bailout of Spirit Airlines, and so I turned to an expert, David Shepherdson, who covers transport and aviation for Reuters. And it's a pleasure to have a former Detroit news guy here with us back on the air talking about this. David, welcome back.
Thanks, Paul W.
You know, it's easy for some people, $500 million, don't take our $500 million to bail out a company, but there's a lot of tentacles and ramifications to this, aren't there?
Oh, this is a super complex decision that has lots of pluses and minuses, right? So, you know, on the plus side, you mentioned Spirit has, you know, 2-3% of the market. It serves, you know, people who really, many of them who can't afford traditional travel, you know, on a Delta, American, United. Often those flights, you know, are bargain basement, you know, no frills, you know, everything is sort of added fees. And Spirit has the effect of keeping prices lower on routes where they compete against legacy carriers. Now, as you point out, Spirit has made a profit since 2019. They've been in bankruptcy twice. They're really being hurt by these fuel prices, which is hitting them on trying to offer these bargain basement fares. And nobody wants to buy them. I spoke to Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy. He's like, look, why should we buy them if nobody else does? What's the plan? What are we going to buy? Are we just foreclosing the inevitable? On the other side, it also is 17,000 jobs. It's, you know, concern on the White House that President Trump will be tarred with, you know, the Iran war killing an airline. Now, I think it's fair to say Spirit was in serious trouble before this, but some might argue that the Iran war and the high prices are sort of the straw that broke the camel's back or what could potentially push them into insolvency without the government getting involved.
Well, frankly, I'm sure, David, I'm not the only one that remembers that President Donald Trump had his own airline years ago and it didn't work out so well.
Yeah, no, that's true. He had the Trump shuttle between the East Coast, New York, Boston, Washington. And I think one of the problems the administration's had, again, we don't know for sure. It seems pretty likely that in court today, Spirit's lawyer said the government had made a financing proposal. The creditors are reviewing it. But, I think if you talk to people, most likely this would be structured as a passive investment. The administration does not want to run Spirit. They don't want to be in the business of, you know, deciding what planes to buy and routes, but rather they would view this as a short-term emergency loan that, in without the high oil prices, Spirit would be able to survive. Now, there's a lot of, you know, people don't agree with that. Senator Ted Cruz, Elizabeth Warren, you know, people on both sides of the aisle say, what are we buying? Are we bailing out an airline without a real plan for it to survive? But there, you know, there's definitely two sides of the coin.
Yeah, and by the way, it's funny because you use the right term. David Shepherdson, who covers transportation, autos, and aviation for Reuters, you said this loan. Well, I'm almost looking at this as a family member in need, needing some money, and if you're going to give them $500 million, don't expect to get it back.
I think that's exactly right. So the way it would work is the government gives $500 million in debtor-in-possession financing. Most of that gets converted into a post-bankruptcy loan, and the government gets warrants equal to 90% of Spirit's equity in order to, like, you know, pay back or to recoup much of the $500 million. But you're right. I think the chances of the government getting all the money back, especially if fuel prices remain, you know, stubbornly high for 6 months or a year, is very, very grim. The other interesting thing that was mentioned in court today is this a way to try to merge Spirit with somebody else? Is there somebody, a bigger, more deep-pocketed airline like a Delta or American, United, Southwest, that'd be willing to buy some of Spirit's assets and some of those routes and gates?
Do they have valuable routes and gates?
They do, and they have planes, right? So they're pretty strong in Florida, and they have a few, you know,
relatively new
routes. Sorry, say again.
Are the planes relatively new, or are they old vintage?
You know, they're mostly older Airbus planes. You know, they're not long haul planes. You know, obviously the bigger planes a lot of the carriers want. So again, because, you know, think about the Spirit, most of their flights are shorter. You know, they have some, you know, longer flights, but they've had a lot of struggles, right? Because part of it is the branding. You've just pointed out you're an active flyer. You've never flown Spirit, right? And I think their product is not one people want to fly. Yes, it's cheap, and people want to get from point A to point B. You can definitely see why you would want to fly Spirit because of the price.
Yeah, my kids
fly Spirit because of the amenities.
When Dad stopped paying for the tickets, sometimes my kids would fly Spirit, and I'd always go, "Oh boy, are you sure?" And they were very happy. They didn't get, you know, in trouble. But the other thing to look at is 17,000 jobs. And if, in fact, having a place, a company like Spirit Airlines around keeps the other airlines in check in terms of costs, that has to be weighed as well.
Yeah, I think that's right. And to be fair, Spirit is a professional operation. They've, you know, trained pilots and flight attendants. They have a good safety record. But the difference between flying a Delta and a Spirit is they have so many fewer flights that if that Detroit to Washington flight gets canceled on Spirit, you might not go to the next day or, you know, 10 hours later. Whereas you're on Delta, you know, there's going to be another flight in 2 hours. And so that's the other problem those guys have. And the other issue is credit cards, right? Delta, American, United, they have hugely loyal credit card customers, and Spirit just can't compete on that front.
Yeah. David, always a pleasure. How are things going? Well, I hope.
Good. Nonstop news. It's never a slow day in D.C.
We're finding it's never a slow day anywhere anymore.
That's true.
Thank you, David. David Shepherdson, transportation, autos, aviation for Reuters, and formerly a hometown boy at the Detroit News, as we continue in focus with Paul W. Smith at WJR. All righty. We've got so many things to talk about. Here's one that we haven't talked about, and this is troubling news, obviously. According to this, and it may or may not be correct, there's no way for me to, I can't double fact check this on the run like this, but Mike can follow me. About one in five Americans may be exposed to potentially dangerous nitrate levels in their tap water. Well, I haven't trusted tap water for a very long time. This is a new report that has shown this. Invisible, tasteless, and odorless, Nitrates in drinking water have been linked to thyroid disease, certain cancers, and other health harms. One Midwestern city has emerged as a nitrate pollution hotspot, with levels in local rivers so high that the city had to build one of the largest nitrate removal plants in the world. It doesn't tell me what city. Do you know what city it is, Mike?
Yeah, I found a CNN.com article. It's Des Moines. Des Moines is a hotspot for nitrate pollution. And this was done by a group, by the Environmental Working Group, or EWG, a nonprofit health advocacy organization.
And then we have to find out who's behind them.
Right. So I'm doing a search for Detroit, seeing if it says anything. Because I got to tell you, ever since the Flint water crisis, I'm like, how many other cities? Right, there was a lot of other cities.
Lots of other cities. And the BS, the bologna and cheese, the bologna and cheese that was out there explaining, I just lost my line of thought because I just got a text saying we were kicked off of YouTube.
Yeah, we were because
we were breaking up.
Yeah, we're trying to save our bandwidth.
Oh, that's right. I turned it off on my end too. Okay, all right. Anyway, this is behind the scenes, some of the technical difficulties, folks. What were we just talking about? It was something
about bologna and cheese and nitrates and lead in water.
In the water. I don't want to go down that road regarding. No, I'm not going to do that.
Oh,
all right,
man.
But water overall. What we used to just reliably depend on by turning on the spigot, the tap, we can't, which is why there are so many
like filters and stuff.
Filters that are doing so well out there. And then you have to figure out what filter is the best one. And then you go to bottled water and you say, oh, but you're getting microplastics in your brain. And apparently that's not helpful.
Right.
I was looking for any help to my brain I could get, but microplastics aren't one of the ways to do that.
You know, if you get too much sun, you die. If you don't get enough sun, you die. So
it's very tough.
Yeah.
It used to be, as Grandpa Harry used to say, live to be 100 before it was popular, everything in moderation.
That's right.
But now we have so much stuff out there, chemicals and other things in our environment, I'm not sure everything in moderation.
Yeah,
because there are some things out there that didn't exist in the past.
I mean, I just see everything as a gamble now. Eventually you switch from pop and sugary drinks to water, and then all of a sudden, one day you find out you're ingesting a bunch of nitrates.
Yeah, doesn't make sense. All right, a quick one. Florida Attorney General James Utmeyer announced a criminal investigation into OpenAI and ChatGPT. Over the AI chatbot's alleged involvement in a deadly mass shooting at FSU.
Huh. I don't even remember. I'm trying to remember the shooting they're talking about.
I don't know, but they say that ChatGPT advised the FSU shooter on gun selection, ammo, timing, and location for the shooting. You got to be kidding me. By the way, now I'm seeing the baseball player who caught the Gilbert, who caught the ball in his shirt. Now I'm seeing it all over the place. When we started the show, we just had to see it based on you finding it for us. Anyway, all right. I hear the music, which says we're on our way out, which the good news is, right after the news, he's on the way in. It's JR Afternoon with the one and only Ryan Ermani. I know you're ready to go, Ryan.
Can't wait, Paul W. We're going to have a great show for you today. Pistons, Lions, and a little politics. How about that?
You got it all going on, my friend. Have a great one. I know you will because you're always ready to hit the ground running. I'll look forward to spending Friday with you tomorrow. Regards, Paul W. Smith.